And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
That should stay in the show because it just makes me look stupid, which is always good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to your second favorite, third favorite, your favorite hour of fantasy baseball content. It's Under the Radar, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. This is Ian Khan doing a poor Nando DeFino impression. We have a very special guest today, but before we welcome him in, first, my friend and yours, Derek Van Riper.
Hey.
That's a funny joke that we'll have to explain, I guess, later in the show. And now, a very special guest joining us this week. We thank Glenn Colton. We thank Alex Cushing for an excellent job. Both of them for wonderful jobs. This week, our special guest is Nando DeFino.
Hey!
Nando!
It's good to be back.
Do the opening. Go for it. Go ahead. Do it right.
Well, I can't. How could I top that enthusiasm that you just brought?
You got to bring it. It's got to go old school. Go for it.
Under the radar.
There we go. All right, yeah. Nando. Go for it.
All right. Thanks, thanks Glenn and Cushing and you guys for, I mean, I'm back for a week and then I got to dip back out. Technically, actually DVR, I know you tweet these out. Maybe you shouldn't tag me in it. Like, I think legally I'm not allowed to be working right now.
Well, you're not really the host. You're a guest. You are right, a guest on this show this week. This is not your show like it normally is your show. You are a guest on the show. And Nando was tweeting about fantasy baseball a weekend. I was like, this boy needs to come back. He is missing the show. He is like missing talking about fantasy baseball. So I was like, guys, come on, let's just bring Nando. It's an hour. Come on.
I was trying to explain, like, you know, like you have the child on you and there's not much you can do and you can't fall asleep, but the child rolls off. Yeah. So I was just kind of like, all right, you know, I've been very active in my leagues. Just cause you know, you got like an hour and a half where you're just sitting there on your phone typing away. Or watching Turn, by the way, which we should talk about at some point in the show.
Can I say something? I cracked my phone about a week ago, and I've been so crazy with my Little League baseball playoffs, right? And the final...
You don't say.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, more intense than you can possibly imagine. It's tied 1-1. We won game 1, 3-0. We lost game 2, 1-0. Game 3 is tonight at 5:30, but it looks like rain, so it's probably going to move to Wednesday. And I'm prepping district practices because I'm the coach of the Little League World Series team for my district. So I haven't been able to practice with that team other than the 3 weeks before. Everything has been so freaking intense. And so I cracked my phone last week. And
out of anger?
No. I dropped it on the pavement. Pavement is like the worst thing.
Someone said Glenn Colton's name and it's, my phone.
And I've been living with a cracked phone. I think it's actually going to hurt my vision long term. Because, like, have you guys ever dealt with this before? Like, a cracked phone, and I can't get to the Apple Store. So, finally, because I got to work during the day, I'm working all day, and then at night, I'm practicing or playing in games. So I haven't been able to get there. And now tomorrow, I'm finally going to do it. I'm like a real pain in the butt about this. Like, if someone has a cracked phone, and they're like, oh, it's fine. I'm like, it's really not fine. Go get your phone fixed. And I'm sitting here with a cracked phone. It's, like, actively challenging my life. Have you guys ever had this experience, and how do you deal with it?
It's good to be back. Diving right into baseball.
Well, you were just mentioning your phone, and this is kind of how my, you know, all right, sorry about that. All right,
I'm not going to mention any more, no more inanimate objects.
Yeah, I mean, I've dropped several phones because I'm a human, a clumsy human being, but I have been using the OtterBox, like the really like rubbery, pretty thick cases on my phone probably for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now. Highly recommend it. Saves you a lot of trouble.
I have the OtterBox, and it broke with the OtterBox.
Oh, you got to talk to the OtterBox people. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it just landed face down, and as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, man, I know that this just got me right in the kish-kish. So there's my kish-kish. All right, so first thing we're going to talk about is the big picture. Nando, you want to talk about Wander Franco?
Yeah, did you organize these, or that's DVR?
DVR organized them, and then he put in this, DVR. And he put in a dad joke at the end. Ian's Corner. Do you see what I did there?
No, that's clever. Yeah, that's clever.
Because it's Ian's Corner, but it was Connor, Carner.
Carner.
So, how about that?
Carner. Okay, so I'm just going to start us off, but then we're going to go back to old school. Wander Franco has arrived. What do you guys think?
I think it's the sell window is right now. This is the highest he's ever going to be. And as we say this every time a prospect with a ton of hype gets called up, and this is just talking single year leagues, not dynasty, but I mean, he's good. He's amazing. And he'll probably like burn you in September. But right now, you could probably get a lot for him.
DVR, what do you think?
It's tricky because if you look at projections, and we look at them all the time, his projection is second only to Vlad Jr. among prospects in the past decade. And Eno wrote a pretty long article about that for The Athletic on Tuesday. You should check that out. But if you look at what Wander is actually projected to do rest of season, his numbers are basically the same as David Peralta. And if you think about it, well, how excited would you be to get David Peralta on your team right now? Yeah, okay, he's a nice player, but not really that much of a difference maker. But the thing you're hoping for is that Wander goes well above the projection, right? You're kind of thinking about it from a probability perspective. Like there's a chance that he comes up and he is more like an Acuna or a Soto or a Tatis and does it right away. But he could be like a Vlad Jr. where he's very good, above average, but not elite from the jump, right? That's a highly likely outcome. That's a more likely outcome than him being a star from day one. But it's the possibility that he is a star from day one that gets you excited, that gets you to make the decision to hold on to him as long as you've had to in redraft leagues, right? In a redraft league where you've only got 5, 6, 7 bench spots with all the injuries we've had this year, it has not been easy to wait until the second half of June for a guy to be a contributor in your lineup. I think the projections are pretty realistic in this case. I just think you have to not expect stardom, even though it is in the range of outcomes from the jump, right? Like it could take him 2 or 3 years before he's a first round fantasy player. It could even take him longer than that. He may never reach that level. There's a whole bunch of things that can happen, but it's weird when you guys listen to people who talk about prospects or you read prospect columns, usually for most players, there's something they don't do well. And I'm always amazed that people really can't even pick nits in Wander's profile.
He's walking.
He is. He does walk. There was a little picking of the nit. Jeff Pontus, Ralph Lifshitz, our friends over at Prospects Live, they really pointed out in the offseason that his launch angle was down. I mean, that he was hitting really a lot of ground balls. The one thing I would say from a dynasty perspective about Wander Franco, this is a unique situation. Typically, I say, hey, wait till that day. They're coming up, and now's a good time to move him. You can't move Franco here. You cannot move Wander Franco.
I mean, what if someone offers you Mike Trout?
Right. That's the
single season.
Well, single season? Mike Trout's weird. Because
fascinating with Trout on the IL, isn't it?
With Trout on the IL. Right, right. That's an interesting thing. I would take Trout in that spot. I would definitely take Trout in that spot. Because also, you're talking about the Tampa Bay Rays, right? I mean, think about it. You're talking about the Rays. So he might play 4 or 5 days a week. There's no guarantee.
Oh, they wouldn't do that to him.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that to him. They might.
No.
They might. I mean, if he comes out hot out of the gate and he's helping winning games, then they're not going to do that to him. But if he's struggling at all, no, they'll play him 4 days a week, 5 days a week. So, you know, the upside on Trout, I don't know. I would definitely take Trout in a redraft. I was thinking, would you take Trout in a dynasty league for Wander Franco right now? And I don't think I would, actually.
I think I like that extra decade that you get with Wander Franco.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 10 years of value. And so I don't think you can. I mean, I guess if you were in a competition situation, you could do it, but that's about it. I mean, that's about it. Franco is top 15 dynasty asset right now. And
I guess he's not number one, right? You got to do Acuna and all those other guys.
Oh, absolutely. Acuna is so nuts. I mean, and, you know, Acuna, Soto, Tatis. I mean, that's still. Can I shift off real quick and ask you guys a question? Tatis is remarkable, right? But do you ding him? Because I do, on the fact that he dives for balls and hurts his shoulder. It's like we're going to talk about Byron Buxton later in the show because it's under the radar and Nando's back. And we're going to talk about
Byron Buxton. Poor Byron Buxton, man.
Got hit in the hand now and Adalberto Mondesi. But Tatis has a little bit of that going on too. Like, do you not? I mean, how would you do 1, 2, 3, 4 if you're going to put Vlad at 4 now, which is, I think, a miss on my part in my dynasty rankings. I think I had him too low.
I saw someone give you crap for that on Twitter. I think
it was on the dynasty rankings page where they're sort of like, how do you have Vlad not in the top 5? And I was like, well, you know, probably wrong, actually, now that I think about it. It's one of the hard things about doing rankings. Like, the moment you put them out, you go, I want that back. And then you got to wait a couple of weeks to make the adjustment. But,
you know, you can tell us and we can fix it for you.
All right. Well, maybe we should do that.
We have that ability.
That might be good. So Acuña has to be number one.
Tell Funston.
Acuña has to be number one. He has to be. He's ridiculous. Like, just every time I look at the box scores, I'm like, Acuña did it again. Oh yeah, someone hit a home run. It's going to be Acuña. Yep, it was. And he's stealing bases. He's doing everything. But then when we get to Tatis and Soto, the numbers on Tatis are insane. 22 home runs with the injuries. I think 16 stolen bases or something. But in a dynasty format, DVR, who do you pick? Who would you take? Soto or would you take Tatis?
Soto versus Tatis, that is a really tough question. I think entering the year, we were right to look at Soto as the hitter who most closely resembles Trout, even if the stolen bases from Soto early in his career aren't going to be anywhere close to what Trout was giving us back in the day. I think it's easy right now because of the way Soto has started this season and the way Tatis has started this season to say, oh, it's got to be Tatis.
Right.
But I do think you have to keep the shoulder on your mind, even though we don't want to. It's the kind of thing that can be a recurring problem. And I think if you're playing for the long, long future, you have to also imagine a point in Tatis's career 4 or 5 years from now, already hard enough to think 4 or 5 years from now, where he's not running nearly as much as he runs now. Right? He's going to taper off in steals because everyone does as they move into the back half of their 20s or approach age 30. You're never relying on Soto for that. I think you're getting a higher average from Soto. Run production and power should be comparable, if not favoring Soto, for most of that time, even though that has not been the case so far. So I would say slight edge to Soto, but it's a really fun Dynasty League debate. I mean, did anyone think when Tatis had that shoulder injury, 6 weeks ago?
Right.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be fine. He's going to come back. He'll tweak his swing. He'll be fine. Like, we were definitely worried that changing his swing was going to either cause something else to become an injury or would take away some of his power. And that has not been the case whatsoever.
Nando, which way do you go?
I don't know. I have no idea. And it's not like I'm out of it. I just don't know. At the end of the day, which way I would go. I think Tatis, I think you're right. I think Tatis is not reckless, but is maybe going to set himself up for some injuries. I was doing before Scott Angle came on, I did the ads and drops column, and Ha-Seong Kim, I advocated spending a lot of money on him, like 40% of your budget, because inside injuries is like, yeah, this is going to bother Tatis all year long, or, you know, he's going to have surgery eventually and this and that. And I'm paraphrasing. They might not have said exactly that, but I was so gung-ho on Ha-Seong Kim that I stuck my flag in him, got him everywhere. Because I think Tatis is going to have to be shut down at some point. And I thought it was going to happen the other night. I thought we were there when they took him out. Yeah, I really did. And like, I traded the day before in a score sheet league for Kim, in a dynasty score sheet league. So I don't know. He's just so good. I'm trying to think of, like, there's a fantasy football parallel somewhere. Like, some guy who's just, he plays 13 games, but whatever. So he's amazing in those 13 games.
The problem is he can get hurt anywhere. I mean, he can get hurt stealing bases on the bases. He can get hurt swinging the bat. We saw that. And he can get hurt in the field. Like, it's like every time he plays, he could get injured. It's like Mondesi or Buxton at this point. So I think my answer is Juan Soto. I've told the story before about how Robert Mershak and I traded Soto away for Tatis. Actually, I did that before Rob joined the team. But then before this season, we traded back. And it's really like the only players you can trade him for. You cannot make a trade. You can't trade for Fernando Tatis or for Juan Soto unless you're giving up one of these just elite, elite, elite players.
Where's Ohtani? Is Ohtani elite?
Yeah, he is.
But I mean, is he that level elite? Like, would you have to throw in... Would it be like Ohtani and
You got to add a little something.
Your mean Mercedes?
Your mean Mercedes, that bubble has burst.
I think Tony La Russa messed him up. I think Tony La Russa messed him up.
Maybe, but the thing about Ohtani that's awesome right now, so I have Tyler Glass now in many, many leagues across the formats. Like, he was just a guy that I was all in on. And so when he went down, it was a real frustrating moment to watch. You know what I did this week in a lot of places? Because Ohtani only has 5 games this week and he is pitching, I put Ohtani, because I have Ohtani on most of those teams too, I put Ohtani into the Glasnow spot as a pitcher. And this is where I'm flipping him, right? Because it's like, well, which way are you going to use him? And in most of those leagues, my hitting is really strong. It's like, now's a good, that's what makes Ohtani kind of special. It's like, he's the best. He's just the absolute best. And most fun player in baseball. So I don't know, DVR, where do you put Ohtani on that list? I think I have him at 8 on my dynasty list. I think that's where it was.
Yeah, I was going to say top 10 is where you'd go right now, because even if he stopped pitching, which there's no indication that he will, as a hitter, he is elite. He's on pace for, what, a 40-20 season as a hitter?
40-20, I mean, maybe 50. He's got 23 home runs, I think. He's got 10 stolen bases, and we're talking 50-25. I mean, yeah. he's going to win the MVP in the American League. I mean, I think maybe Vlad Jr. might fight him out for it, but how do you argue that he's not the best player in baseball? I mean, I just think he's just the most exciting player in baseball. But all right, so none of that was on the rundown.
You're welcome.
All right, Nando DeFino, Abraham Toro, tell us.
I've got him a bunch of teams, you know, those 50, the draft champions, the 50 round leagues. He was just there, like just the right spot at the right time, every time. And like, you know, 40th round, and I grabbed him, and now, you know, Bregman's out. He's got a spot. He's got a role.
He does.
So I just think Abraham Toro is kind of flying a little bit under the radar. I don't think, you know, these Houston guys, and I guess this is the old system, I guess, more so than the new one, you know, since the sign stealing wiped out that whole regimen. But, they keep these guys down for too long, man. Like, they crush these careers of guys who should be, you know, getting a chance before they're 27, 28. Toro's been down there for a bit. I mean, I know he was in the majors for a little while, 2 years ago, last year. I can't remember at this point. But I don't know. I mean, he's got enough skill, I think, that he's going to surprise a lot of people and maybe even possibly like force an issue about staying back up when Bregman returns.
Yeah, I mean,
or maybe they'll trade him. I don't know. Like, whatever it is, like, he's good.
Yeah, he is good. DVR.
I don't think people really think about him.
I think Toro is exactly the kind of player who can get overlooked because he's not a highly regarded prospect. But he's, if you look at an organizational set of rankings, he's just at that cutoff where he misses a lot of top 100 lists or missed them when he was eligible. I don't think he's eligible anymore. Did a lot of things really well. 2019 was a big breakout season for him. And I think the reason I believe in it is because the power breakout happened at AA. It wasn't at AAA with the rabbit ball. It wasn't just the byproduct of the PCL. He actually showed really nice skills across the board at AA, debuted in 19, struggled in his debut, but I think especially as a part-time guy and kind of an up-and-down sort of player, it's really difficult. We've talked about this before. It's really difficult for a hitter to find his way. He's really just dominated at AAA in the stretches where he's been there. Like, eye-popping numbers, low K rates, good walk rates. He's hit the ball in the air more as he's moved through the Astros system. And I think that Bregman injury, the way they're describing it, you know, it's more than the 10-day minimum. You get the sense that it could be maybe like a grade 2 sort of strain for his quad. He's had soft tissue injuries in his legs for a couple of years now, so they want to get him healthy. It's a Houston offense that has been head and shoulders the best in the entire league. Like, they can wait a little bit on Bregman and they're going to still score plenty of runs. So I'm in on Toro. I think it's a 3 to 4 week window for him at least to be pretty much a regular in this lineup. And even if you're hitting in the bottom third of Houston's lineup, the counting stats should be there for you because top to bottom, they're so good.
I mean, Toro, I love the name Abraham Toro, you know, right? it just has the swing to it. The issue is long term. He's really going to need a trade because there's no spot at the end for him. I think he does play some first base. I remember him playing some first base in 2019, but at the same time, You know, once Bregman comes back, there's going to be very little room at the inn. I do wonder, though, whether this is a decent time to keep your eye on Toro in a dynasty format, like if he's pick-upable, because I don't know that Correa ends up back on that team next year. And I do think Bregman does move back to shortstop. It's unusual to see a guy who has played third base for most of his career end up back at shortstop, but Bregman's got the body type for it and probably was always sort of wants to be back at short. So if Correa goes, then there's a spot open at third base. And with the way the salaries go, you save an awful lot of money. Correa's not that good. I'm sorry. I guess I should be a little bit more respectful, but he's certainly not the level that people were thinking of him when he came up as a rookie. I think it was in 2015. So, you know, Toro's the kind of guy I think you'll get 3 weeks. And if he really does well, the time to buy him then is when Bregman comes back. And if you're a rebuilding team, buy him on the dip. Buy him when he's only playing twice a week for the upside of having him for next season.
I like it. We're not going to get to anything in the show. We're number two on the rundown.
No, we're fine. We're fine. Now take it over, Nando. Go.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You know what, Nando? Take it over now. Take over old school. You mention, you say what it is, what we're, you know, the topic, say your thing, and then pass it on to us. More fun that way for me.
It is more fun when you're not guiding the ship, right?
Yes, very much.
That's why, because you could be silly, Ian. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for.
I got to slide in some turn here, too.
No, we'll do it at the end if we have time.
You've ignored 25% of my text message questions.
No, I haven't.
I asked if people thought you were British.
They do, yes, they do.
They have, I'm telling
all right,
you,
well,
man,
let's save it for the show.
All right, go to Jesus. This is the show, isn't it?
No, go to Jesus Lizardo.
Jesus Lizardo.
There you go, ahead.
I think he's the tremendous buy low. His minor league, like, we're talking about a guy who's a top 10 prospect twice, at least for Baseball America, which is my go-to for stuff like this. But like, I mean, like, I still think his pinky's hurting him from when he broke it playing a video game. His numbers are terrible this year, but like everywhere else, I mean, I guess except for last year, but everywhere else throughout his career, numbers have been amazing. So like every league where it's possible, I'm actually going out and trying to actively get Lizardo. I think he's going to stay down for a little bit, fix whatever's wrong, maybe take some time to fix his pinky if he has to, you know, just disappear for like 10 days in the minors and then come back and be awesome. I've got a lot of Lizardo. I got a lot of Frankie Montas and... Ugh. At least Montas is getting some wins, but oh like God. Both of them, I expected such big things.
Montas broke my heart last night. There's a unique thing about when one of your thing about pitchers is like it's a little bit like Pat Riley's talk about when is either like winning is fine and losing is misery. It's a little bit what it's like having pitchers in fantasy baseball, because I had Jacob deGrom going last night, Yu Darvish going, and Frankie Montas going last night in the Devil's Rejects League, which is a, you know, a really good 20-team league that Wilson Kerman and I are fighting it out for first place. And it's all about our ratios. We made all these trades for pitchers. And so deGrom goes 5, gets the win. Darvish goes 6, gets the win. They both pitch brilliantly. And then Montas, he rossed me last night. And I have Montas pretty much everywhere. So it's just painful, because the good starts don't feel as good as the bad starts feel bad. Good starts just feel like, yeah, all right, cool. Phew, got through that. Phew. And the bad starts are just like, you know, silent hello, darkness, my old friend. I mean, it's just like that for me. So anyway, Jesus Luzardo, sure, in a dynasty format, it's a good time to buy, because the owner of that player is frustrated with him right now. For sure. So again, if you're a rebuilding team, I agree with that. Jesus Luzardo. DBR, what do you think?
Jesus Luzardo has been a pro since 2017. How many total innings do you think he has thrown in those 5 seasons?
Majors and minors?
Every level, yep. How many innings?
286 innings.
Yeah, the way you're making it sound, I would say like 250.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are close. 306 and a third, which is way less than you'd think for a guy with 5 years as a pro. And again, he was really young going back to short season and rookie ball. So I know we're not going to have a guy that in 5 years would have thrown 800 innings, but that's a lot less than most people, I think, would assume, right? Maybe I led you guys with the tone of my voice.
You did a bit, question. Yeah. I think you did.
You totally did, yeah.
A little bit.
350 Ks in 306 and a third innings across all of those levels. A 3.32 ERA, a 1.14 whip, and he's still 23 years old. And I don't think the stuff is bad. There were never questions about his command.
The stuff is great, man. Isn't it?
I see this as a small bump in the road, probably something that did result from breaking his finger playing a video game, either because he's not completely healthy or the team is just frustrated that he's not getting the results, or some combination of both.
He's hurting the team.
Yeah, and they need him. So yeah, we've seen plenty of good players, hitters and pitchers, go down, spend some time in the minors, come back and be amazing. And I still believe in the talent long term. I think it is difficult to talk yourself into trading for long term pitching in keeper and dynasty leagues a lot of times, because you know, you don't want to hold those players forever because they break. But at the same time, Luzardo is right in that sweet spot right now where the value's down. He's not that far away from possibly giving them high-quality innings. I would try to make that move in any keeper in Dynasty League where I can.
So a segue to that is what I wrote right below this, is I'm finding it harder than ever to find good underrated starting pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in a 12-team points league with my friends from home. Actually, friends from college, whatever, home league. And I'm usually pretty good at, like, finding these, you know, high strikeout. It's a points league, so it's all messed up anyway, but really it's just strikeouts and innings pitched. And I can't, like, this year, just like the waiver wire is just so uninspiring. It's just been like a mess this year. And I don't know what it is. Like, usually I can find these little gems, and this year I can't. And it's been very annoying. I know that's a very vague general question, but are you guys feeling the same way? Like, when you hit the waiver wire, it's been like, I'm good with the bats. I love the bats. But even someone like Steven Gonsalves, who I've been banking on in a couple of leagues, hasn't come up yet because he walked a bunch of people in the minors early on.
DBR?
I think I've had an okay time on the wire with pitching in most leagues. GDD is an exception. I just had no luck finding quality arms there.
Winning that, by the way?
It's Steve Kaz is in first, Ariel and Derek are in second, and I'm in third with Rob.
Yeah.
All right.
No pitching. I have hitting that's good enough to contend and pitching that is not even good enough to get to the middle.
We just lost Glass now. So yeah. it's gonna be a heavy haul. That's not one of the leagues I'm gonna win this year, I don't think. I got a couple of leagues that I'm in really strong position that I think I'll stay in the money, but I don't think I'm going to win. I mean, it's early, but and also in that league, I got Ohtani for $15, which was one of the happiest fantasy baseball moments of my life, because it's a daily league and you can hit him 4 or 5 days. You can hit him every day and then pitch him on the days that he pitches. So that might be the upside. But Eduardo Rodriguez has hurt me too much in that league. I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez has been a remarkable disappointment. But DBR, you're finding in most leagues you're fine.
I was just going to think of some examples of guys that were not drafted in most mixed leagues. I mean, Carlos Rodon has been outstanding. In shallow mixed leagues, Trevor Rogers wasn't drafted. I know he was drafted in most of the leagues we play in because we know people who liked him or we liked him ourselves. But you go further down the list, you see names. I mean, Danny Duffy's been surprisingly good. Wade Miley's been actually pretty useful.
Yeah,
Austin Gomber.
Isn't that uninspiring to you?
Kyle Gibson.
Kyle Gibson is anything but uninspiring. Kyle Gibson was a pick. I picked him up in a league early in the season. And except for his first start against Kansas City where he blew up, he's been dominant since then. I mean, actually dominant. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. And Carlos Rodon was picked up early, man.
I'm not saying he was available 3 or 4 weeks ago. I mean, he was second start of the season. People were jumping on him. But I mean, Luis Garcia was a waiver guy.
Yeah,
and
for
he's
sure.
been amazing so far.
Yeah, but guys don't pop up. I mean, I did spend on Matt Manning this week in GDD. I popped $6 out of 100. And I was just sort of like, you know what? We got to replace Glass now. Maybe Manning will find. You know, he hasn't been great in the minors, but maybe you know he came up. He threw 5 good innings, and you know he looked pretty good. But it's a dangerous situation. But I mean, you know, Manoah showed up. Alec Manoah showed up, but it has been harder.
Nate Pearson still hasn't showed up. Like you
no,
know, like,
it's just, true.
Like these guys who I think were supposed to.
Wait, you know who was pretty good? Ross Stripling has been pretty good off the wire.
Ross Stripling, apparently he's been tipping his pitches and he fixed it.
Is that what it was?
That's what I read somewhere from someone legitimate. Like, not like a...
Because I've always... I mean, it didn't make any sense why he was struggling so much. That would make a lot more sense. Because his stuff is great. I mean, I've got him going in a bunch of leagues this week. Tonight he's up against Alcantara, who I also have in a bunch of leagues. What do you guys do when... We've talked about this before. What's it like... What is it like for you when you have two pitchers going up against each other? I just pray for a 2-1 game or a 1-0 game.
Yeah, that's all you can hope for. And just hope that with two guys going in the same game, that at least one of them is the winner.
Well, that's, at least one of them? There's really just one of them.
Well, yeah, only one right. can be. But like you don't also miss on the win with two guys pitching in the same game.
It's so hard. And, you know, wins are one of those things like, oh, I got a win. Great. It feels okay. And then when you realize I haven't gotten a win in like 3 weeks, I'm losing my mind. Fantasy baseball can be tough, man. Fantasy baseball is tough. Because last week I had to decide on Chris Flexen whether I was going to start Chris Flexen again. I forget who he was up against. It was a good matchup and he pitched great. But you just like, it's like playing Russian roulette with these guys. Like you literally in an AL only league, I had him in AL labor and I started him. And it's literally like you put the gun to your head and you pull the trigger and you're either going to die or you're going to be safe. And that's what it feels like when you play the game. Am I the only one who goes through these experiences, guys?
I don't play in Devil's Reject. That sounds really serious. That league's way too intense for me.
No, Chris Flexen is AL labor, which is going quite well, guys. Listen, can I say this? I'm going to say this now. Right now, I got a pretty good lead. Larry Schechter is coming, but I'm up. I got 96 points, and Schechter's got 87 points. Eno's got 78 points, and then Colton the Wolfman, who is scary. Have 72, but if I can win AL labor, I don't care about any other league this year. If I can take labor,
why? Why is that? Is because you already won Tout Wars?
Yeah, and Devil's Rejects is another league that I just joined in 2020, so I haven't won that, and I'd like to. That's the second league that I really would like to win. But AL labor, I mean, just because you're playing against the best in the game. I mean, these are the best players in the game. And to be able to
NFBC people are gonna get mad at you for that.
Well, best players in the expert leagues, I think. I mean, just the 11 players that I'm up against in AL labor are they're just, you know, these are guys like Tristan Cockcroft and Brett Sayre, Steve Gardner, and you know, Jason Collette, Clay Link, Colton the Wolfman, Eno frickin' Saris, Larry frickin' Schechter, and I would use a different word. You know, it's just. Todd Zola. I mean, this is just Dave Adler. It's just the best. These guys are the best.
Do you just want to finish naming every single?
Yeah, well, I realized that if
keep
I
going. Go ahead.
No, I realized.
Read off the website.
No, I'm here, and I realized like I better say everybody's name. But it's just, you know, it's been very fortunate. Cedric Mullins III has been carrying me, but these pitchers, man, and there's nothing on the wire on the pitching side. There really is. There's nothing.
What I'm saying. Like it's not.
There's
like
no
the guys
starters.
You're rattling off are so like low strikeout. They have a history of high ERA.
Yeah.
Like you know, what's to say Kyle Gibson.
Oh.
Hasn't been like okay, so Mike Minor.
Mike Minor has been carrying me this last month.
But that's what I'm saying. Is he a sticky guy? You know what I mean? Like, is he a guy who's...
Oh, that, see, that's the other question. We really don't know. I mean, we really don't know what's going to happen over the course of the next month. I mean, the next 6 weeks. When Brandon Woodruff gave... he was in Colorado, so it wasn't that bad. Did you happen to see that start, DeVere?
I did not see that start.
That was a little scary, though, because you don't see that from Brandon Woodruff.
It's Colorado, though. Same with Burns. Like, Burns didn't pitch that well in that series either, but I can't look at a start at Coors where the ball doesn't move the same way regardless of what you're doing to the sticky stuff on your fingers. Like, I can't use that as my proof or reason to be overwhelmingly concerned about anybody. It happened to be Coors, but Coors is a terrible litmus test for whether or not someone was using something and no longer is. We need 100%. A little more.
No, 100%. 100%. And I am not making any kind of random... I just noticed, I was like... what happened was, I saw 5 runs in 3 innings and I went, holy smoke. And then I went, oh, and Coors. Okay, well, maybe not. Maybe that's not what it has anything to do with. It really is. Coors to me is like, you know, you really can't start almost anybody there. Like, almost anybody. You can start DeGrom there. You could start Gerrit Cole there. I don't know. Who else can you start, of course, besides those two guys?
You got I think I brought him up before on the show, this guy Clifton Neely, who is doing like this crazy research about VMI, and crazy in a good way, like visual memory index and it was like the different sea levels and stuff. And I think he's very close to cracking what kind of pitcher and what kind of circumstance can actually perform well there.
What kind of pitcher can?
Because I don't know. Al Melchior has actually done a lot of work with him, and we kind of used Al last year or 2 years ago, I guess, to write the column using Clifton's data, which was like he nailed so much stuff. It's like if you're coming from a place at one air density level, and you go to a place that has a different air density level, if you're the pitcher and the team that, you know, like say you're playing the Cubs and the Cubs are coming back from like a road trip, and they're, you know, readjusting to Chicago density level, you're at an advantage because they're not adjusted yet to, you know, if they were there playing a homestand, they know how the ball travels. They know like what a curveball, how that moves, you know, how a fastball moves. But like, if, you know, if you're coming into the environment for the first time, there's a huge advantage you could have if you understand how the ball is going to move. And you can fool a lot of hitters with
it. Yeah, man. That's true. It's very much true.
It is. I don't know why more people haven't discovered Clifton Neely yet, but...
Now, you were going to ask...
BaseballVMI.com.
What was your Cal Quantrill question?
When I was thinking of pitchers I could pick up who I kind of like, Cal Quantrill's like the only guy.
I kind of like him. I kind of do. Yeah. I mean, he had the pedigree, too. He pitched really well this weekend. I was sort of like, oh, look at Cal Quantrill. Look at that. In fact, I'm going to go take a look in one of the leagues to see if he's available while DVR tells us what he thinks of Cal Quantrill.
Quantrill, I think, has long been one of those guys that if you use some of the stuff plus numbers and like individual pitch grades that Eno writes and talks about a lot, he's always popped. It's a deep arsenal, does have the pedigree, obviously in an organization that develops pitching really well. And I think Quantrill is the kind of guy, if you're trying to pick up a pitcher on the wire, you have to be willing to pick up guys with bad ratios. Someone who's been hit once or twice this season, or maybe had a couple bad relief outings that skewed the ratios. Quantrill's at least fixed his ratios. They look good. He's got a sub-3 ERA, 127 whip. K rate's down a little bit right now, but I don't know if I want to read too much into that. So he's an easier guy to get on board with than someone like Will Crow, who I actually picked up in NL Labor this week. And I was looking, there's a cool new-ish feature at RotoWire where you can see on the player page, if you sync up all your leagues, you could see if a player, as you look at their player page, is available in each of your leagues. And Will Crow is a free agent in every single one of my leagues except for NL Labor, which makes sense. He's got a 6.42 ERA and a 1.57 whip. But here's where I'm going with this. Like, I think you need something. It doesn't have to be necessarily stuff plus, command plus, but you need something to guide you to some of these pitchers who haven't been good yet but could start to put it together, because you want to be ahead. You don't want to go out there and chase Will Crow after 6 innings of 1-run ball and a win with 6 Ks against somebody, because everyone's going to see that and everyone's going to chase that. But if you look at the underlying numbers, you see good slider, good changeup, passable fastball, pretty good command. That to me sounds like a guy that could actually have some success, or at least be streamable in mixed leagues, or someone you want to use.
Like Sam Long. If you were in on Sam Long before Sam Long, that makes a pretty big difference. that really does make a pretty big difference. And just to be clear, the team, the only place that I can pick up a player whenever I want is in Devil's Rejects, which is why that league is so fantastic. So I went to the wire while you, as you were talking, to see who is Kyle Quantrill available. Is he available? He is owned by Eno Saris and James Anderson. Oh, ding!
Not so surprising.
Not surprising at all. I was like, ah, well, there it is. Eno's a genius, man. Come on now. Eno Saris, ladies and gents.
He's something else.
Yep. There's our ad pause.
You don't have to say it every time we do it.
I know. I just wanted to say we did our ad pause.
Now DVR's got to edit stuff out.
He was going to edit it. He's going to have to edit that anyway. Sorry.
No, you just copy and paste the ad in.
It's not like when you listen to a baseball game on the radio and they have to do 10 seconds for station identification and then they actually say something. You know, it's not like that.
That should stay in the show because it just makes me look stupid, which is always good. All right, Nando. All right, Nando, keep going.
No, so I don't know where to go now. You know, I'm going to force the issue. I want to talk Turn real quick because, well, you know what it's like? It's like, I'll tell you what I was going to say off air. But what it is like is, you know, I've known you in this context as a guy who tries to perfect an Ariel Cohen impersonation and like, you know, cool guy hanging out, co-host, smart dynasty guy. And it's just like so cool to watch Turn and just like for a second, just be like, oh, I know him. That's really cool. It's George Washington, you know, and maybe it's doubly cool because you're not like, you know, Benedict Arnold in there. You know, you're not like one of the soldiers. You're from George Washington. But it's a good show.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry it's taking me this long. I've needed, you know.
You needed to have the time, and now you have the time. But no, thanks, man. What I find is with the people that I work with in my day job, they start watching the show and then they're done in like a week. And I'm like, you know, I speak to them one week. They're like, I'm two seasons in. I'm like, wow, that was really fast. And then I talk to them the next week and they're like, I'm done with season four. The show's over. Now what? And I'm like, there's nothing I can do for you. But people do seem to really enjoy it once it gets rolling. It takes, you know, it's an AMC series. So if you look at the first few episodes of Breaking Bad, if you didn't know how great it was, it might feel a little like, what the hell am I watching here? Like, is this ever going to turn into something great? And then it does, obviously. Breaking Bad is if you have to choose between Breaking Bad and Turn, and you can handle the craziness of Breaking Bad, go with Breaking Bad. I think it's a better show. But Turn, people really do love it. So
humble. There we go.
No, come on, trying to pitch Turn. But listen, man. I mean, you know, we're fine. We're Kyle Tucker, but you know, Breaking Bad is Ronald Acuna. I mean, that's just, you know what I mean? But hey, so we're Kyle Tucker. I'll take it. You know, I'll take it. But thanks for watching.
Bern Gorman's not in Breaking Bad.
No, you like Bern Gorman a lot.
Bern Gorman's
don't
basically,
you?
I'm going to buy his poster and hang it on my wall or something.
Why, you know, people love Bern Gorman. He's very, you know, character and destiny and all this. And he's very, very British and, you know, sort of thing. You know, very fussy. He does some funny stuff, man. I'll tell you, watching that show, I would watch the show and I'd be like, how is he getting away with that? With a couple of the guys, like Simcoe. You know, I mean, he's one of my best friends in the world.
He's fantastic. That guy's fantastic. Is he British?
Yes, he's British.
Now everyone I feel like I should ask for everybody.
Everyone on the show is British except for myself, Anna Strong, and Benjamin Talmadge. Everyone else in the regular cast is either British or Australian. Caleb Brewster is Australian, and Mary Woodhull, the wife of Abraham Woodhull, is Australian. Everyone else is British.
Interesting.
The show is historically very accurate, and it's very kind of you to watch it. I would prefer if we had gotten Midnight Run in first, but I'm grateful you're watching it.
Well, I can do Midnight Run, but it'll have to be over text. Like my whole thing is just being quiet, and like I'm watching these shows 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And actually, so here's a funny thing. You know, we take naps in the middle of the day, my wife and I, when the baby naps.
Sure.
And so I'm like, all right, I'm gonna watch Turn. She's like, okay. So I start watching it and she's not napping. Like I look over and she's got her glasses on and she's watching it. I'm like, you're supposed to be napping. So it's actually slowed down my Turn watching because she wants to watch it now.
All right. Well, so, hey, you know.
There you go. That's a compliment.
It is a compliment. And I'm very grateful. It was a remarkable experience in my life. It was a seminal experience in my life. So thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Now tell me about Jake. Oh, go ahead.
What would Bern Gorman say if we told him about this Ariel Cohen thing?
Which Ariel Cohen thing?
Which one? Exactly. Yeah. All right. Let's go on. Let's move on.
Okay. Very good. So Jake Bowers. Jake Bowers is on fire.
On fire. We can rip through these guys. These are Nando guys.
Go ahead, Nando. Go ahead, Nando guys. Go.
Jake Bauer's on fire, and he's playing, and I think he's going to keep playing. I think Evan White can go play in the outfield. Bauer can even go play in the outfield. There's a way for him to play. I think Bradley Zimmer, who's not a my guy, but he was floating way under the radar. Like, way, way, way under the radar. And he's a former top prospect. Was like a six-game hitting streak, was hitting for, you know, he was looking good. Not a lot of extra base hits. And then went 0 for 5 with 3 strikeouts, and they benched him for 2 games in a row. So I don't know.
But they gave him time. They're going to let him play. I mean,
I think so.
I talked about him on the show a few weeks ago with Glenn, when Glenn Colton was on the show.
I thought you would have laughed harder at the Glenn Colton, George Washington show.
Oh, no, I did.
That was pretty clever, right?
That was actually one of my favorite moments in the whole series, is like one of the few moments where George Washington is happy. Where like he gets some good news and he bangs on the table, and Nando writes to me in DVR and was like, look, he's just banging the table for Glenn Colton. It's pretty funny. Yeah. And I've got Stephen Root right behind me. I mean, come on, man, Stephen, I got to act with Stephen Root for like a year. It was so great. I freaking love that guy. He's a good friend still. I called him after, I had never watched, what's that show? Oh God, what's it called?
News Radio?
No. Barry on HBO. So I never watched Barry. Have you guys seen Barry on HBO?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh my God.
I have not.
So, it's DVR. It's well worth a watch. It's a little dark. It's really dark. And Steven is brilliant in it. So I finally watched it because we went out to breakfast last year, right before the pandemic. We went out for breakfast. He came to New York and he was like, so you watching the show? I was like, I'm sorry, Steven, I haven't watched Barry yet. He's like, oh, you should. Okay. So I finally watched both seasons and I called him. I was like, oh my God, that's his Walter White. That's why I called him. I said, Steven, this is your Walter White. You are genius on this show. Like, I mean, you know, and the other guy, the lead guy who I also love, whose name is totally escaping me right now, from
Jason Sudeikis.
No, the other guy, he's Saturday Night Live.
Bill Hader.
I freaking love Bill Hader, and he's great on the show, and they're great together. But I was like, Steven, like, you are the star of the show. Like, you are the, and he was like, oh, Ian, oh, geez, General. So anyway, yeah, I don't even know how we got there. I don't even know what that was about. Andy Ibanez.
You got there from Bradley Zimmer somehow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Andy. That's too bad.
Andy Ibanez, I think he played second base. He's the third baseman. He played second base last night. Good. He's not, dude, you know what? He's Adolis Garcia, Yermin Mercedes, older guys, 28 years old. He's a Cuban guy, has power, a lot of power, can hit for average, steals bases, walks a bit. Like, his walks and strikeouts are a lot closer than you would think for a guy who's been buried in the minors for this long. Just keep an eye out. Just keep an eye out for Andy Ibanez. He's on a few of my teams.
He broke my heart last night with his 3-run home run.
Why? You love Texas.
Yeah.
Or have you turned against Texas?
No. But he was against Frankie Montas, who had going in labor and everywhere else, and Devil's Rejects and everywhere else and everywhere else and everywhere else. So, you know, I saw Andy Ibanez. But okay, I'll look into Andy Ibanez. DVR, do you know anything about Andy Ibanez? Do you believe?
I can't figure out how he hasn't had a chance prior to now. I mean, the minor league numbers do look solid. 2019, of course, year of the rabbit ball. But, you know, above average at AAA that year. Great this season. Good plate skills. Even if you bump up the K rate by 10 or 12% from where it was, a 25% strikeout rate in the big leagues would be passable if that power shows up. So curious to see where he plays, but maybe this is sort of the sequel to the Yerminator experience.
Where were they? Were these Round Rock? Fresno? Maybe it was a Fresno? Jeez. Whatever, like wherever these guys were buried, must have been a great team. You had Adolis Garcia and Andy Ibanez.
So Andy Ibanez, does that DVR, because I'm looking at him, he's available.
They're probably Hans Kraus. He's been hurt.
He's available in AL labor, right? He's hitting 161 for the season. You
can't trust that. That's like with like...
No,
they let him play for 2 weeks in a row and he's doing 161, I'd be like, all right, something's wrong.
Okay, but no, but what I'm asking DVR is, do you buy in on the Ibanez in the same way that you would buy in on a pitcher if you believe that the stuff, you know, that he can do it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you were talking earlier in the show about, you take the pitcher who doesn't have the great numbers but has something that you really like. Would you make that same feeling? Would you have that same feeling about hitters?
Yeah, I mean, in mono leagues especially, you have to get on board with a player before they prove it in order to save fab. If Ibanez starts every game this week and mashes, he becomes a $10 to $15 pickup on Sunday night.
Yes,
if Ibanez plays three games this week and doesn't do much, and the numbers on the surface are mediocre, he's probably a $2 to $3 pickup in a league like that. And I think it's
different though, because in that league, you got to, as you know, you got to put him right in your lineup. So you got to play him. It's not like you can just sit him.
In a lot of instances, because of injuries, you just need someone who's going to play. If you've got great depth, maybe you're lucky enough where you don't have to do that. But I'm more comfortable with a player like Ibanez at two or three than I am having to pay extra because of one great week. Because regardless of whether he starts, well, here's the problem. If he starts slow, he doesn't get more playing time. If he starts red hot, he becomes too expensive. So you need him to sort of like walk this line in the middle where he's playing enough to earn more playing time, and he plays well enough to get that playing time, but he doesn't play so well that everybody just throws too much fab at him. Like, that's sort of what you need, or you have to be a week ahead, right? If you find out he gets called up on Sunday and you know he's going to play a little bit preemptively before even getting a chance to see him based on the minor league track record, you know, you throw a $0 or $1 bid in leagues where you're allowed to do that and hope that the playing time is there. I think that's the better way to play it. It's harder to dig in every corner like that and to be completely locked into every IL situation and replacement, but that's ultimately how you get a lot of value with in-season pickups.
What about Kelvin Gutierrez? Do you have any thoughts on him? Because I'm riding him right now, and he's riding a little bit into a ditch. Third baseman for KC.
Kind of an empty bat, unfortunately.
He looks big and strong, and like big, strong, handsome, strong. Big, strong, going to hit the ball. And ends up not hitting the ball so much.
Oh, like Yandy Diaz?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he's not making as much contact even as Yandy Diaz. I mean, he's really struggling. I had to decide who to drop in AL labor between Danny Mendek and Kelvin Gutierrez. And I saw this little thing about how the White Sox might try to trade for Eduardo Escobar from the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is a trade that you and I made in OTP. No.
That's right, man.
We made that trade because I moved Madrigal in a trade with Mike Paolucci. By the way, Mike Paolucci has left the Athletic. We love you, Mike Paolucci. He's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, good guy.
Yeah.
He sent me a text. He was like, hey, just want to let you know I'm leaving. And he got a job at this great magazine in Dallas. But it is funny. If Eduardo Escobar gets traded to the Chicago White Sox to take second base, I think that'll just be ridiculous. So I had to decide between Kelvin Gutierrez and Danny Mendek. I tried to make a trade. I called Tristan. I was like, hey, you want this? You want this? He's like, no. I just picked up Luis Rengifo, so I'm not going to do that. But I ended up just dropping Mendek because I thought there's a longer, better chance for Gutierrez to have the spot. By the way, can I just say, I'm getting my ass kicked in Tout Wars. I'm getting my ass kicked in Tout Wars. Like, I'm in like a 10th place, 11th place out of 15. It's just not getting much better. Like, it's going to be... I don't know how I'm gonna get into the top half. I don't remember the last time I finished below top half ever. And it looks like I just better pray that everyone starts looking at football because I'm just getting killed. I just need to say that because I was talking about, hey, this league is great. No, there's also Tout Wars. And it's just been just a disaster. That's it. I just had to say that.
I'm
just
trying to battle for a bronze. Like, if I can get to the top three, I'll be thrilled. It looks really like a two-team race, though.
Yeah, it really is. And Jeff Zimmerman is very good at this baseball game.
Yes.
He's very, very good at fantasy baseball.
I don't think I've ever really been in a league where he hasn't... I've never been in a league where he's been bad. I can't remember a time where I've looked at the standings and Jeff was buried in those standings.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
I mean, Louis Robert...
It's not Adam Ronis level, though.
Yeah, no, it's Adam Ronis level.
Yeah, I think it's a lot like that. Ronis is ridiculously good. Same kind of thing. You look at the standings and you're like, geez, like he's...
Ronis is always good at GDD. I'm always like, that's a good pick. That's a good pick right there, Ronis. He is really smart, but I don't know, man. I lost too many good players and I just cannot recover. I'm just treading water. And then it's one of those dangerous situations. Like, do you make like a blow up trade to try to get to the top half, but then you can end up in the bottom three and then you lose fab going into next year? Like, a lot of problems here. Like, it's just not friendly.
I think you have to just do something. You can't sit and some people do this. They sit back, look at their team. They're like, I got a bunch of guys that underperformed, you know, regression.
Mine's an injury. It's injury, injury, injury. I just lost them. They're gone. I got plenty of fab now. I'm mean, I lost Eloy. I lost Louis Robert. I lost Travis d'Arnaud. I lost James Paxton. I lost Aaron Hicks. I lost Kyle Lewis. I mean, the whole team is... Nah, nobody wants to hear about it. Everyone goes through this.
I think they're listening specifically for that.
Nah, they're not. But, you know, you gotta take your lumps along the way if you're going to talk about blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's showbiz.
I've got your Kelvin Gutierrez thought here, too, by the way.
Please.
Why does he hit the ball on the ground so much? He's got a 65.1% ground ball rate so
far. I'm
going
to talk to him.
As a big leaguer. You got to call him up. You got to get him on the phone.
And I will.
There were some signs of him maybe putting the ball in the air more often back in like 2018 and 2019 at AA and AAA, but whatever was getting him to pound the ball into the ground then, like that must be in the scouting report because that's an extreme ground ball rate. It's so hard to damage with that.
Because he looks like a big, strong man, like a big, strong Jorge Soler boomer, and he's just more of a Yandy Diaz grounder.
He doesn't strike out much, so it's not like a contact problem. He's shown the ability to walk before. 9 homers at AAA in 2019, but again, you're the rapid ball. 12 for 13 is a base stealer that year in 75 games, so kind of weird that he showed this ability to pick his spots as a corner infielder in the upper levels of the minors. Maybe hasn't been on base enough to really run as a big leaguer, but there's... In a really deep league, 12-team AL-only type league, I understand why you'd like him, but the thing that just jumps off the page to me is that ground ball rate. It's disgusting.
Disgusting. It's disgusting. A couple of quick things, because I know Nando's got a run that I do want that's still on the page. Ed Rosario is almost up to 280. I'm very happy I traded for him at your advice, Nando DeFino.
When you were goosing him.
I guess you're right, because, I mean, he's also playing every single day, batting second at shortstop. He's really coming along.
But you know, Jimenez might be the move here. I don't even know how he's been doing in the minor leagues, but I mean, like, just everyone's probably just dumped him. You know what I mean?
You need an injury to see him back. I mean, Cesar
can play the outfield.
No, they're not moving him. No, they're not moving him. No.
Maybe Jimenez has been playing the outfield.
They're not moving Rosario. They can't. And they got to build him up. They got to build on what he's doing. And the beginning of the opening of that lineup, Cesar Hernandez has been no joke. Ahmed Rosario has been great. And Bobby Bradley. I think we've been talking about him a little bit. He's just, they're not getting to him. He's lost a lot of weight, too. He's got a different body now.
Jimenez has 7 home runs in 27 games in the minors.
And what's his average and what's his OBP?
Is it 252, OBP of 303, 6 walks to 30 strikeouts, which probably... Yeah.
How many stolen bases does he have down there?
1 steal.
No, forget it.
It's almost like he's figured out how to hit for some power and he's lost a little bit of what moved him through the minors at first. Like, he'll maybe balance it out and there's still some keeper dynasty appeal, but I'm definitely not looking at him as a guy that...
is going to come up and just help us.
Nope. Yeah, I'd be careful about that.
It would have to be a situation where there's an injury.
Shortstop and second base.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, if Rosario goes down or Hernandez goes down, yes, for sure. Pick him up. Like, get ahead of it, right? But Rosario is the guy. And the other guy that I really did want to mention was Alberto Mondesi and Byron Buxton. The question you asked, is Alberto Mondesi the next Byron Buxton? I mean, what's going on, man? Because... The kid comes back from his oblique issue, comes back for 3 games, then gets a hamstring issue, comes back for 3 games, hitting home runs, hitting doubles, like, you know, looking like, wow, what a stud. And now back again with the oblique issue. It's really problematic.
It's the other side, too.
Is it the other side? Oh, man, yep. I didn't even catch that. So, well, actually, that might be better because maybe it's not as... Do we have any idea of how bad it is?
I usually admit a minimum. If it's grade 1, it's more than the 10-day minimum. A lot of times, it's more like 2 full weeks.
And then Buxton comes back, finally from the hip, finally get him back in all the lineups, and then last night gets hit in the hand. It's weird. It's weird.
You know, Will Carroll wrote something interesting. Not that he's injury prone. And I'm paraphrasing. You probably look it up and do a better job than I am of reciting this. But he's like, he could have worn a hand protector. Like, not like it's his fault. You can't blame a guy for, you know, his hand broken. It's terrible luck. But he could have been wearing a hand protector.
I mean, everybody should maybe be wearing a hand protector.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough because you see very few players wearing those, right? I mean,
they start wearing them after they get hit.
Yeah, well, it's like the flap that covers your jaw, too. After a guy gets hit or has a teammate get hit, he gets that flap to come down. I I think you've seen enough people get hit around the game to probably want that extra flap. Like, wouldn't you just get that when you're young, get used to having it and worry less about it as you move up? I mean,
in Little League, that's how it is now. It's like every you have the flap. You don't play without the flap because it's just too darn dangerous. But it's almost like karmic with these guys. I just don't get it. And, you know, health is a skill. As Ariel Cohen said, you got to take health into account because if you're going to spend your auction dollars on guys who aren't going to play for you, it's a real problem. And I was like, yeah, but
thank you. I can go now. Thank you.
Yeah. But
you close out the show.
I've got $68 worth of two players on the IL and in AAA on my Tout Wars team. Like I'm feeling that. Ariel's not wrong.
No, I don't think he's wrong. And I'm sort of, you know, you got to take it into account. I mean, Josh Donaldson's another guy on my Tout team where it's like, yeah, there goes his calf again.
Right. Well, Donaldson, okay. So I think when we have recurring soft tissue injuries, those to me should be in the clear, you know, injury prone or elevated injury risk bucket. Injury prone has such a negative connotation. Like elevated injury risk is another way to say it. Maybe that's a little bit
nicer.
These guys don't want to be hurt. I think there's this
misconception
in some corners of the internet that highly paid athletes just like to sit back on the IL or on like the injured list in any sport and just collect their money. And it's not. That's so stupid. It drives me crazy. Here's the thing with Buxton. I'm looking at the five-year injury log in the Baseball Forecaster. It's one of my favorite things to reference only because it just clearly lays out how many things a player has dealt with. This goes back to 2017. Buxton, strained left groin, fractured great left toe, migraines, a concussion, a left shoulder subluxation,
a bruised
right wrist, inflammation in his left shoulder. That was last season during the shortened season.
Yeah.
The fracture to his hand, and he had an injury before that this season. I mean, there's a mix there where you do have some soft tissue type stuff or injuries that just, you know, happen because of the wear and tear of playing the game. But then there is that bad luck that is on top of that. There can be, I've described it in the past as maybe accident prone players, guys that either for one reason or another, maybe it's the way they play, like if they run into walls, like Bryce Harper early in his career, I would have described him as probably an accident prone sort of player. Buxton plays defense like that. Like colliding with outfield walls is an occupational hazard if that's your style of play.
And I know we got to go because Nando's got to go. He's got an out. But why don't they make the walls...
but not a hard out.
Right. Well, that's why I said an out because otherwise you would have said, yeah, I got to go. But why don't they make the walls more padded in the major
leagues? Like a bounce house?
Like a bounce house. Make a freaking bounce house. Or at least make it, I mean, not a bounce house, so if the ball goes off of it, it's going to bounce back.
Foam ball pit. It needs to be like a foam ball pit that you learn how to do flips and stuff into. Because that way, if you jump at the line where the wall is and you like fly into the ball pit, you don't get hurt.
Yeah, but like in Minnesota back in the 80s, remember that in the Metrodome? Like guys would bounce off the walls.
I don't think we want to recreate that exact thing,
fine.
But the concept is probably
good. I'm just saying, like, why would you, if you got a guy who's making $25 million out there and you own the team and you own the stadium, why would you put, like, hard walls out there? Like, look at what happened. That Rob Refsnyder, did you guys see that? Where, I mean, I shouldn't laugh because the guy got a concussion. But, like, he was just going back, went up against the wall. It's like he ran into a wall because he did.
Because he was catching the ball. He was doing his job.
Like, he was doing his job. So why don't they make it safer for the players?
There's a lot of good questions there. Why do you have brick-lined walls up
the
first and third baseline?
Lined walls
they
at
look
the
nice.
First and third baseline because they look nice. Why would you do that? It's dumb.
You could make the game a lot safer. It might be less aesthetically pleasing for the people watching it, but I would be a lot safer for people playing it.
Yes, I just don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. When guys run into walls, I'm like, why isn't that softer? Like, it shouldn't, you know, especially it's your team. Like, these are your players. You lose them. Nando, what do you think, man?
I have no opinion.
Okay. Fair enough.
No, I do think there's...
I gotta go.
I mean, yeah.
No, I really gotta go. The baby's gonna be crying.
Baby's asleep from what I can tell.
That's good.
But I think there's a little bit of both. I don't think if there was a science to it, like we would have cracked it by now. Chandler, I think it's, you know, health is a skill. Inside injuries is usually right. Like 85-90% of the time.
Well, you know,
right.
You can say that Ron Chandler said it first, and you're probably right, but I said it better. Health is the skill, and I mean it.
Thank you.
Sorry. It's like Pringles, man. Once I pop, I can't stop. Speaking of which, next week, Nando is... We were lucky to get him back. I begged him to come back because I missed him so much. Well, yeah. I asked him to come. I did. I was like, come on, come back for a week. You're a guest on the show. But next week, we will have a very special guest.
This is a very involved guest appearance.
Next week will be a very involved guest appearance because next week's guest will be... DVR, tell
him. I'm not going to tell him.
It's going to be me. I'm going to be on the show, and it'll be the best show that they've ever had. But you know why? Because I'm on the show. That's why. So Ariel Cohen will be joining us next week on the show, and I will not be doing an Ariel Cohen impression on the show. So you're just going to have to enjoy, just have a memory of it, because I can't do it when he's on. It's just too weird. Too weird.
Say that now.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll see.
Yeah, I think when we listen, I think it's a totally different story.
All right. Get us out of here, Nando.
We got to go. By the way, really quick, I want to shout out... this guy, R Bar Todd, on Twitter. I know this is a little weird to end the show, but like he's this guy who's like a big fantasy player. I met him back in my CVS days. He owns a bunch of bars out in San Francisco. And like this, one of his bartenders died like back in February. And they're doing fundraisers for him. And they're selling these hats that are really cool for $25. Everything goes to the dude's family. So just hit him up on Twitter at R Bar Todd if you want to check it out. It's Todd with 1 D and then the letter R, Bar, T-O-D. I don't know. I bought a couple. I went to the bar and met the bartender. He was awesome. So anyway, just wanted to shout that out.
I mean, I guess. And right? Yeah, for sure.
And the hats are cool, but they're not like cheesy hats that they just got printed up. Like they're trucker hats. Yeah, they're nice.
Love to their family for sure.
Yes. Let's see. I gotta get out of here. I gotta go eat. I'm working on like 8 hours of awakeness. for the man. Who, starting next week, will be hosting the Hey, I Broke My Phone podcast and talk fantasy baseball for the first 10 minutes. Ian Khan.
Goodbye, my friend. See you next week.
For the man who's inadvertently had the first two seasons of Turn spoiled for him in our text group because he made it seem like he's gone beyond episode 4. Derek and Rabbi.
See ya.
Sorry about that. Goodbye, everybody. I'll be back. I don't know who knows when. Enjoy Ariel and Ariel next week.
Good talk. Good talk.